One cannot too much wonder at the weakness of love, nor too long pause upon its strangeness. For it is not as a stale, everyday affair that we would consider it, but as the unique, novel, and isolated occasion which it really was, and is to this very day. A great lady, elegant, superior, proud, worldly, hitherto self-contained within her personal and religious arrogance, and now, all at once, fallen victim to a you, and a you from her own point of view entirely unworthy and unsuitable, fallen victim to such weakness, with such abandonment of her rank, that she was hardly capable of sustaining even the role of mistress and challenger, but knew herself to be already a slave, as with shaking knees she fled half-blind, her thoughts flickering in her head, murmuring broken words, heedless of the maids whom she had pridefully taken with her to the rendezvous. Lost, lost, betrayed, betrayed. I am lost. I betrayed myself to him. He saw it all, the lie in my eyes, my restless feet, my trembling. He saw it all. He despised me. It is over. I must die. We must plant more dura. We must destroy the weeds. The stalks are good for brooms. What did I answer? I betrayed myself with my stammering. He was laughing at me. It was frightful. I will kill myself. But was I beautiful, at least? For if I was, in that light, then it was only half bad, and I need not kill myself. The golden bronze of his shoulders. Oh, Amun, in thy chapel! Sovereign of my head and heart, my hands and my feet. Oh, Osarsif, speak not thus to me with your mouth, laughing the while in your heart at my stammering and the weakness of my knees. I hope, though all may be lost and I must die after this mischance, yet I must hope and not despair, for I am not utterly unhappy. There was much happiness in that I am your mistress, boy, and you were obliged to speak to me with such sweetness, saying, sovereign of my head and heart, though it was only lip service and empty homage. But words are strong. One cannot speak them without consequences. They leave traces on the mind. Spoken without feeling, they yet speak to the feeling of the speaker. If they are lying words, yet the magic of them changes one a little in the direction of their sense, so that they are no longer quite lies. That is very happy and hopeful. For the soil of your nature, boy, must be turned by your words, making it a good soil for the sowing of my beauty, if I have the good fortune to appear before you in a favoring light. For the subservience of your words, together with my beauty, will bring me healing and bliss. From it will grow a worshipful feeling, only needing encouragement to become desire. For so it is, little boy. Worship encouraged becomes desire. Ah, what a depraved woman am I, with my wily thoughts. Shame upon my head and heart. Forgive me, Osarsif, forgive me, my master and deliverer, O morning and evening star of my life. Why had it a day to go all wrong, so that all seemed lost, because of my restless feet? Yet I will not kill myself, not yet send for an asp to lay upon my bosom, for there is still much hope of happiness left. There is tomorrow, and all the other days. He will remain here. Petipre refused to send him away, to sell him. I must see him every day. Every sun rises with hope and good prospects. We must continue, steward, another time. I will take counsel of myself and permit another meeting. That was good. It was providing for the next time. Oh, yes, that was sensible, Annie, that in all your madness you had thought for continuance. He must come again. And if he delay out of shyness, I will send to him Dudu the dwarf to remind him. How shall I make good all that today went wry? I will meet him calmly, and my feet will stand still, and only betray a little, a very little encouragement to his homage, as it pleases me. Perhaps he will seem less beautiful to me this very next time, so that my heart shall cool, and I can smile and jest with a free mind, and inflame him, while I suffer not at all. No, oh, no, Osarsif, it shall not be. Those are wily thoughts, and gladly will I suffer for you, my Lord, and my salvation, for your glory is like that of a new-born bull." This rhapsody, of which the maids Hedges and Meet caught some words to their vast amazement, was but one of many, of a hundred such which escaped the mistress that year, while she sought to conceal her love from Joseph. The dialogue about the Moorish corn, which preceded it, likewise represents many of the same kind, carried on at various times of day, in various places, in the garden, in the fountain court of the House of Women, even up in the little summer-house, whither, however, Aeney never came unattended, and where Joseph was likewise accompanied by two scribes carrying paper rolls, accounts to be submitted, and other documents. For they always talked of domestic affairs, ploughing, sowing, and reaping, trade and crafts, and the young steward gave accounting to the mistress, instructed her, or sought her advice. Such was the lying content of their talk. And we must realize, if with a somewhat doubtful smile, that Joseph laid stress on it, and tried to make something real out of the pretense to give the mistress a serious account of these practical matters, and gain her interest in them, even if only on the ground of her interest in himself. It was a sort of cure. Young Joseph fancied himself in the role of pedagogue. His plan was, he thought at least, to lead the thoughts of his mistress from the personal to the objective, from his eyes to his occupations, thus assuaging, cooling, and neutralizing them. Thus he should profit by the honor, advantage, and great pleasure of her favor and her company, without risking the pit with which the anxious little vizier threatened him. One cannot but see a certain overweeningness in the young steward's pedagogic design, with which he thought to keep in leading strings the soul of a woman like his mistress Mut-Em-Enet. If he wanted to avoid the danger of the pit, he might much better have avoided her, instead of holding educational conferences. That the son of Jacob preferred the latter may well rouse the suspicion that the cure was a hocus-pocus, and his idea of taking their pretended conversations as genuine, itself a pretense and a pretext for thoughts which no longer served pure mind, but tended to proneness. In any case, such was the suspicion, or rather the shrewd little dwarfish conclusion, of Joseph's gnome-like friend, and he made no concealment of his view, almost daily wringing his hands and begging him not to condescend to evasions and beating the air, but to be as wise as he was good and beautiful, and flee from the devastating breath of the fiery bull. In vain, for his young friend, the steward, the full-sized man, knew better. And when a man is used with good reason to depend upon his own judgment, he is in the greater danger when that reason is clouded. Dudu, meanwhile, the solid, substantial dwarf, acted his traditional role, that of go-between and crafty pander, playing on the weakness of both sides, running back and forth between two who would sin, winking and blinking, hinting and pointing, setting himself to one or other with his mouth on one side, his lips closed, and retailing all sorts of insidious and provocative gossip out of the corner. He played his part without knowledge of his predecessors and successors in it, as though he were its first and only actor. For each of us must consider himself that, in every part he plays, as though he had made it all up himself, yet with a sureness and dignity which comes to him when he plays it, so to speak, in daylight for the first time, not from his supposed invention of the role, but on the contrary, from the well-grounded consciousness that he is once more presenting something legitimate and traditional, and must perform it, however repellent, to the best of his ability, according to the pattern. But for the present, he did not take all the steps which belonged to the role. I mean, he did not yet tread a path which always branches off from the one running between the two parties concerned, and leads to a third. In other words, to Potiphar. To infect that sensitive gentleman with doubt, to trickle suspicion in his ear on the subject of certain meetings. That would come. But as yet, the time seemed not to be ripe. It did not please Dudu that despite all his industry in making the occasions, all the half-invented messages he gave out of the corner of his mouth, at both ends of the road, his mistress and the young steward as good as never met alone, but conversed almost always in the presence of attendants. And he did not like what they talked about, either. Joseph's pedagogic enterprise was not to his taste. It annoyed him, although he saw through it and recognized its rationalized proneness to all fours quite as well as did his pure-minded little brother dwarf. All this exchange of practical information seemed to him to delay a desirable development of his project. He was concerned lest the plan meet with success, and the thoughts of the mistress be elevated and purified, and no longer to the point. Even to her good guardian of the wardrobe, she would now talk about such matters as production and trade, the price of oil and wax, supplies and provisioning. It did not escape his sun perception that she was simply using it all to speak of Joseph, who had taught it to her. But it vexed him. He bent all his energies, directed all the insinuations at both ends of his route, to a single goal. The young steward, he would say, was often sad. He was privileged, indeed, to be with the mistress when his toil was done, or sometimes even in between, to bathe his soul in her beauty, and might speak with her, but only of dull domestic concerns instead of more intimate and animating affairs. And at the other end, the mistress had ordered Dudu to express to the young steward her regret, her bitterness, that he was so little aware of the favor he received in his audiences with her, and would always talk of household matters instead of coming round to himself and gratifying her curiosity about his person and former life, his wretched home, his mother, his virgin birth, his descent to the pit, his resurrection, and so on. Such things were, of course, more interesting for a lady like Moot M. Ennett than lectures on paper-making and installing looms. If the steward wished to make progress with Moot, progress toward a goal higher and splendider than any he had yet reached in the house, he must embolden himself to deal with themes not quite so heavy. "Let that be my affair, the goal equally with the means," Joseph answered crossly. "And you might speak straight out instead of out of the corner of your mouth. I do not like it. Also, I could wish, husband of Jesset, that you yourself kept more to the point. Forget not that the understanding between us is a worldly one, not an affair of the heart. Continue to report to me what you hear in house and courtyard. I have not encouraged you to offer friendly advice." "By the heads of my children," Dudu swore, "according to my bond, I have but told you what I gathered from the mistress's bitter sighs because your discourse is so dry. Not Dudu, but herself it is that counsels you to be a little more entertaining." That was more than half a lie. Actually, he had said to her that if she wanted to spy out the source of the young steward's magic and bring him to a fall, she must get closer to his person instead of letting him hide behind his office and his business. To which she had replied, "It does me good and somewhat quietens my mind to hear of his doings when I do not see him." A revealing answer, even a touching one, for it betrays the envy of the loving woman for the fuller life of the man, the jealousy of the nature wholly occupied with feeling against the content which plays so large a part in the life of the beloved and makes her aware of the painful idleness of her own. The effort made by the woman to share in the man's life springs from this jealousy, even when his interests are not of a practical but of an intellectual kind. It did the mistress good to let Joseph introduce her into the practical side of life, on the ground that he yearned to have his youth instructed by her wisdom. And how little it matters, indeed, what the talk is about, when it is his voice that embodies it, his lips which shape it, his gaze which accompanies it, and his nearness which can inform the driest and coldest matter, as sun and water warm and moisten the earth. Every speech becomes a love speech. But it could actually not be carried on as such, consisting as it would have to of the words I and thou, and with nothing else at all, would come to an end out of sheer monotony, so that other things must inevitably come in. Yet it is clear from Annie's simple reply that she treasured even the subject matter of their talk, that it nourished her soul through the vacant, hopeless, enervating days when Joseph was away on business up or down the river, and there could be no moment meeting of the eyes at table, nor could or might she feverishly await his visit in the house of women or elsewhere. Then she fed on the things he had told her, exalted them in her heart, and got much good from her knowledge of his errand in this or that city and its villages, at this market or that fair. For thus at least her woman's misery of utter feeling might be lightened by knowing the content of his masculine days. She could not help boasting her knowledge before the chattering women in her house, before her maids, and before Dudu when he waited on her. "The young steward," she would say, "has gone down the river to Nekeb, to the feast of the goddess Nekbet, with 2 barges full of doom and balanite fruit, figs and onions, garlic, melons, cucumbers from Agur, and castor oil seeds. He will trade them, under the pinions of the goddess, for wood and leather for sandals, which Betterfray needs in the workshops. The steward, by consultation with me, chose a moment for the shipment when vegetables fetch a high price, and wood and leather are relatively cheap." Her voice rang and vibrated as she spoke. Dudu put his hand to his ear to hearken, and bethought himself whether the moment would not soon come when he should take his hidden way to Petipre to rouse his suspicions.